Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for the Law Office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PhD, immigration.com. This is our community conference call, which we hold every other Thursday. And it's a free call that people can participate in, put their questions in. Details can be found at forums.immigration.com. Forums.immigration.com. You will see details about conference call right on the very top 2-3 discussion forums. That said, this call does not create attorney-client relationship. This is merely a call to facilitate some information that is of common interest to the community. This call is being recorded. If you don't want your voice to be recorded, hang up now. I would also strongly recommend that you keep your identities confidential if you discuss your case with me, because this call will be heard by many people. Before I get started on the listed questions, I have a question here which is of common interest to a lot of people. The question is from one of our corporate clients. The HR manager, Kelly, asked me if we had any comments to make about applying for a visa for employees of consulting companies. Well, first of all, the visa stamping for H-1B holders, especially in the consulting companies, has become so difficult. I would strongly discourage people to go and try to apply for an H-1B visa right now, at least for the next few weeks or months, until we see a little bit more reasonableness in the State Department's attitude. I have seen cases, really, really good cases, where every possible document that could be needed, including letter from the end client, was made available to the consulate. And they still denied the application with a really lame and extremely annoying notation saying, "It appears that your employer is either unwilling or unable to give you the offered job." That is utter nonsense. That kind of uninformative, you know, lame, boilerplate denial is what makes this government so unpopular. I have seen more of this nonsense developing in the last few months than I have seen in the entire 3 decades of my practice. So, if you can avoid it, don't go for visa stamping. But if you have to go, keep a couple of rules in mind. Number one, I don't know of any law that says you have to volunteer information unless you are specifically asked for it. So please don't give them your life history unless they ask for it. Number two, whatever you tell them the truth. If you don't know the answer to something, it's okay for you to say, "I don't know the answer." For example, if they ask you about the company and they say, "Well, how many employees does the company have?" If you don't know the answer offhand and you have not looked at your form, it's okay to say, "I don't know for sure," or "I don't know at all." Okay. But whatever you do answer, answer truthfully. Don't volunteer. Don't lie. You shouldn't have to lie about anything. Be honest. If you don't know the answer, say you don't know the answer. I always tell people, if you tell the truth and get into trouble, we can almost always help you. But if you tell a lie and get into trouble, we can almost never help you. Okay. Keep these things in mind. You must review and read your H-1B paperwork thoroughly. You should know what your job description is. You should know what your where your LCA is certified for. You should know what the salary is. All these things should match what you are actually doing, where you're working, and what you're getting paid. If there is any discrepancy, make sure you get the H-1B amendments done before you leave for India or your home country, wherever you are from. Okay. Let me think about something else, if anything else has come up a lot recently. Technology alert list. I'm not going to talk about that because technology alert list is a separate topic by itself. Suffice it to say, if you work with any technology that could be on technology alert list, be prepared for delays. And in those cases, I would highly recommend taking a letter from the employer that clearly describes how your job is not or should not be subject to heightened scrutiny. That said, I want to get into three or four questions that related to visa stamping first. And after that, the rest of the call, we will talk about everybody else's questions. So question number three was posted by a community member by the name of V.S. Antineni, 2000. Says, wife received a 221G while H-1B stamping. So the question is, can she apply for an H-4? And does she have to withdraw the H-1, which is currently under administrative processing? And the answer is yes, you can. In fact, many of our clients have done that. Unless there is something wrong with your wife's credentials and they are investigating your wife, which is almost never the case, they should have no problem giving her the H-4. Most of the 221Gs, what is a 221G? 221G simply means insufficient documentation. A notice under Section 221G simply means we don't have enough documentation. Okay, so if the documentation relates to the company, converting her or getting her H-4 visa right there should not be a problem. So even if the H-1 gets rejected, she can come on H-4. She can also go for H-4 while the 221G is still under processing. And I see no reason for you to withdraw the H-1B visa. You can do it without withdrawing. I'm going to skip ahead to the next consular processing question from Alapati. This is question number 8 in today's conference call questions on forums.immigration.com. He has a series of questions about how to fill out DS-160 online. He's on H-1B. He says, under previous work education training information, they say, where you say, were you previously employed? The answer is yes, but it allows only for the last 5 years, but he has 6 years of experience. What I would do is I would just put in the most information I can. Obviously, if they don't have room for more than 5 years information, then they don't. Okay? And they're only asking you for the last 5 years. I don't think it'll cause you a denial if you do not put more than 5 years. Would you advise that I enter all 6 years of experience? I don't see why you should be putting in more than they are asking. Remember my rule? My rule is only give the information that they ask for. Okay? Number three, then under additional work education training information section, there's a question, have you belonged to, contributed to, or worked for any professional, social, or charitable organization? And he says, I worked as an intern for a company. This work was related to industrial engineering, but now I'm involved in computer science. I would still answer this question yes, because they have asked you a question which is wide enough to cover your internship even in an unrelated field. So I would answer that question yes, and I would describe that internship. Next question is, now this is the one that bothers me, Alapati, where your salary being paid is $3,000 per year less than the LCA. You are receiving $67,000, but your LCA shows $70,000. This is a problem. Because if the LCA says exactly $70,000, that's what you have to be paid. And the last question is, briefly describe your duties. Should this information match what LCA shows? Do I see it's I-129 that shows your job description? Of course, everything should match, and it should also match the facts. You should not just put something down which is not true. If there is a problem, if there's a discrepancy in what you're actually doing and what the I-129 says, your H-1 form, then go ahead and get it amended. Get it amended, okay? Next question is question number 10 from KPPP, who wants to know, he's stuck in India with H1 with 221G problem, but his AP got approved after he left USA. So he had an AP application pending, and he left USA, tried to get his H1 visa stamping, but they have put him in 221G investigation. So what should he do? Can he use that AP to come back? You know, this is a $1 million question, and I'm not sure I can answer it with authority. I can answer it to the best of my knowledge. We checked on this issue with Customs and Border Protection people, CBP.gov. These are the people who interview you when you land in the U.S. airport or U.S. port. And CBP, I think, told us that as long as you were in USA when the advanced parole was applied for, they will accept the advanced parole application in advanced parole entry in these circumstances. Please double check with CBP. Have your friends, one of your friends, call them. They are actually one of the few government agencies who are good about giving information on the phone. So call CBP if they will accept it or not. I think they have told us that they will. I'm skipping on to question number 14. Indiscriminate use of 221G from GLAD 2000. He says, my H-1B extension petition was denied in November 12 because of inability to maintain something at the end client situation. I'm not sure what exactly the problem is. I left the U.S. after 40 days of denial, then got another approval, H-1 approval, with the same client. They are a small company with 2 employees. I went to Chennai for stamping and got a 221G. The case was sent for administrative processing. Yeah, this is a very common problem. What happens is that, oh, I see, what he was saying was EE relationship, employer-employee relationship. So the previous H-1 was denied because of employer-employee relationship problem. How is it that consulate reevaluate my case even though USCIS has already done so? Well, first of all, that's a good observation, and that's the way it is supposed to be. The consulates are allowed to reevaluate the case when you go for an interview. So actually, when you go for consular processing, you are repeating the same process twice. First, you have gone through all this questioning, close questioning by the USCIS. Now you have to do the same thing all over with the consulate. That's the way it is. And I'm telling you, I have said this before, I think it is a very sneaky attempt by the government to try to keep people out who they believe are taking jobs from U.S. applicants, not realizing that many, many of these jobs cannot be filled by U.S. applicants. I actually have 2 clients right now who have close to 100 positions open. One client is in biotechnology. The other client is in RF engineering, and they have software jobs as well as RF engineers jobs open. And they cannot find people in USA. They have been advertising locally. They have tried to recruit locally. They can't find people. Unfortunately, government has this blanket objection against H-1Bs, which is reflected in this very poorly disguised attempt to, you know, question people more closely. Basically, it reflects on their attitude that we are protecting U.S. jobs by keeping people out. Unfortunately, what they are doing is actually losing more U.S. jobs, and companies are moving their operations offshore simply because they can't get people here. We have client after client after client who has been stuck with this problem. So to answer your question, I also realize that they delay you so much that by the time you get the visa processing done, you may not have a client left. And they realize it. That's why they delay you so much. And also, there is a very objectionable procedure in the consulate that what they do is, if they are going to ask INS to USCIS to revoke your H-1, they will send it directly to the USCIS without giving you any opportunity to further rebut or respond. So next time when you call them, they say, well, too bad, we have already sent your papers to USCIS. We can't talk to you. And next thing is, after 6, 7, 8 months, your employer will hear from USCIS saying, we intend to revoke your H-1, and they have to respond to it within 30 days. So it's, you know, somebody, employers who have spent thousands of dollars on each H-1, and employees who have basically put their entire career on the H-1, they are both left hanging because of these very poorly implemented procedures. And maybe, I think, in my view, they are intentionally implemented that way so that people are discouraged from applying for H-1B. So yes, consulates are allowed to reevaluate the case. And the second last question on the consular side. There's one more question on consulate. Oh, it's the same from Glad 2000, says he can't, there's some discrepancy in the numbers. Contact the consulate. If there's a discrepancy in the case numbers, go ahead and contact the consulate. They actually respond to emails also. And the last question on visa stamping is Rajesh. Oops, I don't think this is a visa stamping question. My mistake. We are done with the visa stamping questions. Now I'm going to go back and start answering the posted questions item by item. First question is Sikandar, who wants to know, for I-130, what documents do you need to prove a family relationship? For example, is it okay to give an affidavit from my father or brother-in-law who physically attended the marriage? The answer is yes. Perfectly okay to do that. Is it okay to give pictures, etc., of the marriage? Of course. You can provide that as well as a copy of the marriage invitation. Typically, those are the things that we send out. If during the next several months my wife and I decide not to settle in the States and I want to cancel, withdraw my visa, how can I do this? Is there a form for this? Generally, you can do this just by sending out a notarized letter. Actually, a regular letter should be enough, but we normally have people send out notarized letters. Can this withdrawal cancellation be done at any point during the processing of the immigrant visa application? Yes, it can be done at any point until the green card is actually approved. Okay. Next question I have already answered. That was a visa question. Next question is Kumar P. I am a little confused about Kumar P's question. The fact pattern is fairly lengthy. There is a time. Look, Kumar, here is what I see in your background. You have been out of status at various times during your stay in USA. This can be a potential problem from several angles. Okay? The fact that you were out of status after your PhD admission, the fact that you were out of status when your employer did not pay and you did not complain against the employer, the fact that they gave you a couple of pay stubs without actually paying you, to my mind, that's fraud. Okay? So these are all very, very big problems. These are all big problems in my mind. And I think what you need to do is you need to sit down with your corporate lawyers, do a detailed consultation. There are too many issues here that I don't want to touch in a cursory manner. But I've seen 3 or 4 problems here that could come back and haunt you in many, many different ways. Okay. Of course, your employer is the one responsible in many instances for breaking the law. But for you to continue to ask for change of status within USA when you are not in status, I have seen at least in one case where USCIS made a fraud issue out of that. So, you know, be careful with this. I think you need to, I don't want to discuss this in a forum, open forum, and I don't want to give you advice without having a detailed consultation. I think what you should do is go ahead and get yourself, your company lawyers can give you advice if they are already doing your H-1. Explain to them what the background was. Eventually, I think it should work out fine. But it's got to be, you've got to take a look at the form, you know, DS-230 or whatever you have to file to get the visa stamping, the DS-160. Get all of those forms together. Make sure that you have answers to all the forms questions truthfully, and yet those answers will not hurt you. I have a concern, like I said, about using pay stubs without there being underlying payments made. I think that's a big issue, if they want to make it an issue. Next question is Preeti. Questions on LCA and H-1B visa stamping. Okay. Oh, I should have covered this under visa stamping. I guess I did not notice this, Preeti. You are in USA with a valid H-1B. When H-1B petition was filed, employer sent LCA, etc., working on Project A. However, Project A is now complete, and I'm now working on Project B. Well, if the project is with the same employer, same client, at same job site, same building, same everything, you should be okay with Project B, and as long as the job description is also the same, I think you should be okay. But listen to this discussion that I have about visa stamping in general. I don't like people to go for stamping at all if possible. Question number one, I came to know that a new LCA is required only when the location of project changes. However, do I need to ask my employer to file new LCA because I'm working on Project B? They are the same site. Good. If they are the same site and the job description as well as the salary and job title, etc., remain the same, I don't see any need for an LCA amendment or an LCA change. Question number two, I-129 justification letter has a different project than one I'm currently working on. Is this an automatic denial? I don't believe so. I don't believe so. As long as the overall job description, job site, salary remains the same, you should be okay. If visa is rejected for some reason, after how many months can I go for H-1B visa stamping again? There is no limit on how long you have to wait. You can go right away the next day if you want to. Question number four. I am on the seventh year of my H-1B visa. If H-1B is rejected, can I get L-1? No, not right away, because you already exhausted 7 years of H-1. So then you would have to wait 1 year, 1 year outside USA. Next question, number six, is J.J. Fresh. Canadian born with a U.S. lawful permanent resident husband. She tried to enter USA, and they told her not to enter because she was 6 months pregnant and she was visiting her lawful permanent resident husband. So they said go back. Now, the question is, what is the best route for me and baby to live in U.S.? I think you are going the right direction by going for a TN visa, or I'm sorry, TN or H-1, professional visa. The reason TN may be a little weak in your case is that, remember, TN is not a dual intent visa. So if you have your husband living in USA, they could basically decline to give you a TN on that ground. Okay. So H-1, of course, is immune from that problem. You can try doing a TN, and if it doesn't work, then you will have no choice but to go for the H-1. And I think you're doing the right thing. You're going for the work visa. That is the better option. If TN is declined, I don't see that should become a problem for your H-1. I don't see any issue with that. As long as you have not, you know, told any lies or any misrepresentations were made, you should be okay getting it. Even getting a TN denial will not hurt you. Next question is Bhati, who says, they were on OPT for 1 year, but they did not work during that entire year. You see, a few years ago, it was unclear whether you are required to work. People just kind of took it easy, even if they did not get work. But now the law is that you are given a certain number of out-of-work days. I think 60, if you are on the 12-month, and a total of 90 if you are on the 27-month OPT. So if you are not working during that time, you're out of status. When I go for H-1B stamp, could visa officer deny issuing me a H-1B because I did not work while I was on the OPT. Well, that by itself is not ground for denial of an H-1 visa. It's just because you did not work and you were out of status, that's not ground for denial. But don't lie about it. Make sure you tell the truth. And there is a question that asks you, have you been out of status? And you have to say yes, because you were out of status. And if you didn't know that, that's just the way it is. But even if you knew it and you stayed breaking the law, that is not ground for denying your H-1 visa issuance. However, there are many other problems with H-1 visa, as I have discussed today. Next question, Sai for GC. I'm not clear, Sai. I know that we've talked several times before, and I'm glad that contacting the congressman worked out for you. I think your situation is this, that you had your previous, you had an I-140/485 pending through one employer. Then the I-140 was reopened. In the meantime, you got employer 2 I-140 approved. And you are now, you have a 485 pending along with an I-140. My problem was, and you want to join the incline. My problem was, remember when, I think I remember this kind of vaguely. When we first talked, I explained to you, I said, if your I-140 and 485 were both pending, and then you took another I-140 and put it on top, no problem. You are protected by AC-21. But if your I-140 got denied, and later on you filed a second I-140 and tried to connect it with the 485, that 485 may not be valid anymore because it is connected to an I-140 that was automatically denied. However, if due to a motion to reopen, the old I-140 was reinstated, then so is the I-485, then that I-485 can be used for AC-21 for a subsequent I-140. Okay? So, please, I think you need to check these facts with your lawyers and see, make sure that your 485 is properly filed. If 485 is properly filed and it has been pending 180 days since approval of the second I-140, you should be okay to change jobs under AC-21. Next question is citizenship under 319B. Is there a physical presence requirement under 319B? As far as I remember, there isn't. I think, if I remember correctly, the law on this, and I haven't looked at this law for a while, because 319B situations don't arise that frequently. The idea is this. If your husband is working for an American company engaged in trade and commerce or with a multinational organization for which, U.S. is a member by treaty, or some religious occupations, or I think nonprofit research is also included, then, and he is a U.S. citizen, then your citizenship can be expedited as long as your husband will continue to be abroad and you with him for at least, I think, 12 months after your naturalization approval. So I don't remember all the facts of this law, but I think this is the way it works, and I think physical presence is not required. Physical presence is not required. That three-year presence, that's not required. Here's my practical suggestion. Just call your congressman's office. Have them check the law for you. They can get back with you within a couple of days, and you'll have all the information. Next question, P30 Patel. Their AOS was filed, adjustment of status was filed one day early. The problem is, Prakash, if your AOS is filed even one day early, it can be and it has to be denied by law. However, in your case, you say that the date USCIS receipted your application was a Sunday. I think that could save you. That could save you. Because I don't think Sunday delivery is considered to be having delivered that day. Okay? I don't think they can do that. They said they have received it on Sunday, 31st October 2010. That, I think, will protect you. Even though under normal circumstances, if you are one day early, they will decline your case and you will have to refile. In this case, you might be okay. Next question, Selva_9899 says, I want to know if my son will be a citizen when I get my citizenship. Here is the situation. I'll become eligible for citizenship in July 2010. Son is 12-year-old, born in India, has a green card, lived with me for 9 years in USA, studying in India for the past 2 years, comes to USA every few months or so. Once I become a U.S. citizen, can I ask him to come to USA? I think he has to live in USA for 2 years after the age of 14. I think there's such a law. Again, I don't really run into these situations very frequently, so I don't know the answer off the top of my head for sure. But it looks like he will have to live in USA for a couple of years before you can file the N-600. And I think it has to be done before the age of 18 and after the age of 14, something like that. Again, double check with your congressman's office. And of course, once he gets naturalized, then he can leave. There is no problem. There is no rule that allows, that asks him to stay in USA a certain number of days. Question number 16 is, I have answered the interim questions, a couple of questions that were visa questions. AAP Desai wants to know labor audit options available. Labor was filed, got selected for audit. Audit takes 2.5 years. I have little more than 2 years left on my 6 years of H-1. If after 2 years, auditing officer rejects the case, am I right that I have to leave the country immediately? The first thing I want you to do is, I want you to get a consultation on why the case was denied and why it is pending. You see, previously, BALCA, which is the Board of Alien Labor Certification Appeals, had left a lot of matters unclear. In the last few months, about 10 months or so, they have been giving out a lot of rulings which have made their stance on many of the legal issues very clear. So I read BALCA decisions almost every morning, and I will tell you this, that increasingly they are becoming very hard about excusing any errors, even typos, on 9089. So you need to get a consultation and see what the possibility of success is, okay? And if there is a good possibility of success, then it's worth waiting. But if the appeal is declined, then of course you have to leave USA right away, okay? If you don't have time left on your H-1. But remember one thing, while the appeal is pending, you can keep getting H-1 extensions. So let me take you a step back. I'm sorry. I jumped the gun a little bit. There are a couple of things. If the audit is denied, you can file an appeal. And the appeal also stays pending for a couple of years. Okay? And while the appeal is pending, you can keep getting H-1 extensions. However, you are not permitted to file a second case while the appeal is pending, through the same employer for the same job. You can file a case through another employer, or you could potentially file another case, another labor certification, for the same employer for a different job. It's a little complicated to do that, but those two are possibilities. However, I think your case should be assessed. Make sure that your case is winnable on audit, that there are no other problems that have not been covered. So have your case evaluated. If I would suggest, you know, get yourself a lawyer who can, sift through the entire paperwork and make sure your paperwork is okay. Take a second opinion, or at least have your own lawyers go through the paperwork again and make sure everything is taken care of. And if they suggest that you withdraw and refile the case, you could do that. Once you've responded to the audit, and then you can withdraw the case. I normally don't ever advise people to withdraw the case before responding to the audit, because that can create complications. So is there any way to avoid the situation I already told you? Can I reuse an approved labor cert of another colleague? No. What are the chances? That's not allowed anymore. What are the chances of getting audited case approved? almost all audited cases that we have are getting approved. So audit doesn't mean that it's not going to get approved. Does audit mean supervised recruitment by default? No, it's just an additional possibility. Is it advisable to withdraw current application under audit? That somebody has to assess for you. Can I start another perm in parallel? No, you cannot. Can it be for a different job? Probably, but it does get very complicated. I would not advise that. That would be my last option. Next question, number 17. I guess this is our second last question of the day. I-485 question. Came to USA on a student visa in 2005. Now I'm an H-1B. Never went back to my home country for H-1B visa stamping. Green card is going on, waiting to file I-485. Do I need to go back to my home country before filing for 485? No. If you have never been out of status, there is no need at all. You don't need to get a visa stamping done at all before green card is issued, before AP is issued. You can just stay here as long as you were never out of status, Rajesh. Okay. Last question is AKS 341. F1 student going on leave, visitor visa. He's taking a semester off, so he's been, the school told him he's got 15 days to leave. Schools are really the experts in F1 visa matters. I tend to ask them these questions. If you want to get a few more weeks, you can try applying for tourist visa or visitor's visa and tell them the truth, whatever your reason to stay is. If I would leave before the visitor visa application is decided, if the visitor visa is then approved, would I need to go for a fresh stamping for F1 visa in India? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know whether a change of status to tourist visa would require a re-stamping. I don't think it would. This is my best guess. Normally, if you talked about the same situation being there for H1, you would not need to get a new stamping. So I'm assuming it's the same for F1 as well, but double check with your school. Because of the service record, there are things that I maybe may not be able to comment about. So do check with your school about this. If the visitor visa application is denied, would I be considered to have overstayed? No, if as long as you do it while you are still in student status. What if I apply for a change of status from F1 to visitor, stay for about 2 more weeks, leave USA, withdraw my COS application, and then come back during summer? I think that's a possibility, but I would hate to have you use a B2 application just to stay for a couple of weeks extra. Okay, either stay to completion or, you know, don't file at all and leave. That's what I would recommend. I would not advise you to be out of status even for one day. Okay, I am done with the questions. Let me see if people have any questions on the issues that I have discussed so far. And then if time permits, I will answer any new questions that people have. Press star 6 on your phone to speak with me. Star 6.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Alapati.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening. Good afternoon, Rajiv. I have a question. I posted a couple of questions. Thanks for answering them.
Sure.
But the follow-up question is that you mentioned in one of the calls, in this call, that small consulting companies, when they're going for H-1B visa rejection, it is getting rejected. But my company is...
Hang on one second. I didn't say small companies only.
I mean...
Any consulting positions where you're not working in-house, in fact, actually all H-1s are in trouble, but more so where there's consulting involved.
Okay. My company is enrolled in the Business Effective Program, BEP program, and they said that they're going to give me a folder, like an orange or red color folder, that I have to take it to the U.S. consular officer. So does that mean that it comes under, because my employer has like about 100,000 employees, and does BEP company also comes under this kind of consulting category?
Chances are much better that you will be able to get a visa stamping done. So okay. Chances for the larger companies are better.
Okay, thank you. And a couple of questions is that you were describing about the optional practical training, that internship. I had the same situation back in, I guess it was 2003 and 2004, where I was on OPC, but I was I did not work. I was just looking for the job, but I couldn't find the job.
Mm-hmm.
So in what year you said that this law has changed where somebody has to work, otherwise he would be automated?
I don't recall. I think it was a couple of years ago or 3 years ago. This became effective along with the regulations that allow 15 months extension. You know what I'm talking about, the OPT extension regulations?
I'm sorry, can you please say it again, sir?
The OPT extension regulations, the 15 months.
At that time, I had only, we only got 1 year extension after we graduated.
Yeah, I think you maybe were covered by the old law. The law that the moment they started the 15-month extension, they also clarified they don't want people to be unemployed. If you're an OPT and you don't find a job in 60 days, you have to leave.
If U.S. consular officer brings up this point at the visa interview,
you have to tell the truth, no question about that. Actually, even if in today's environment, if you had overstayed, that cannot be a ground for denial of a visa.
Overstayed or also even like if there are gaps in statuses?
Oh, that's what I mean by overstayed. Overstayed past your, job period. Let's say you have 60 days to find a job and you did not, and you were out of status, and you continue to stay for a year. They can't deny an H-1B visa based upon that.
Sir, actually, you said 15-month extension. What is this? Is there any article or a section number that I could refer to U.S. consular officer?
I think easiest thing to do is just do a search for, I think it's called IF. Give me 1 second.
Okay, sir.
Yeah, I just did a search for STEM extension. Just do a search for STEM. STEM.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you pull
okay,
out a lot
sir.
Of material.
Okay. And one last question of the, sir, one last question is that you mentioned under present work education or training information section of this DS-160 form, there is a question like, briefly describe your duties. My LCA has something like, my employer, even though it's a big company, they put it as a senior systems analyst, and they said that I design, develop the software applications, test, debug, and training users and things like that. I don't really design or develop the system software applications.
Mm-hmm.
So can I put, that is a superset, can I put a subset of what I'm actually doing, even though the...
Yeah, I don't see any problem with that.
Because they said anyway, briefly described, so I'm not really describing
anything. Yeah, I don't see any problem because often the jobs are described as a superset and you do a subset of that. And I think that should be fine.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much, Rajiv. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
Rajivji, this is Sikandar.
Oh, hi, Sikandar. About the I-130, right?
Yes, sir. A couple of quick questions, sir. Regarding affidavits by third parties.
Right.
I was wondering, sir, whether I had proposed a family, which is basically father or brother-in-law, would an affidavit by a third party, such as a friend or a colleague who attended the wedding, would that carry more weight or more credibility than family?
I think you're worrying too much. Spouses of U.S. citizens, they don't really care that much, as long as it was a good fit marriage and it was, you know. See, mm-hmm. typically... spouses of U.S. citizens, you don't have to lie about your application. There is so much benefit available already. There really is no need for anybody to lie. So government is very likely to accept affidavits from anybody.
Thank you. Secondly, sir, the you had mentioned being able to send a letter in case one wants to withdraw or cancel one's I-130 application. Is it a specific address or just the address to which we send the original
I-130? Send it to the same address where the approval came from.
And finally, sir, the accompanying the I-130, one needs to file a G325A biographical information for the beneficiary as well as the petitioner.
Correct.
I was wondering, did they require of the petitioner to complete the form and sign it? Are signatures also required of the beneficiary?
We do send them out. I know that we've had that situation, and we do send them out, FedEx, to be signed and brought back.
Okay, fantastic. Sir, as usual, thank you very much, and hope you have a wonderful
day. My pleasure, Sikandar. Don't call me sir. Nobody does. Just call me Rajiv.
Okay, and always eat dessert first. Bye-bye.
I will too.
See you. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care, sir. Hi, Rajiv. This is EKS 341 Akshay. The last question about PF1 student going on leave and applying for a visitor
visa. Sure. I have placed you. Go ahead.
Yes. So as I said, I might be able to come back during the summer in May or middle of May and do a summer internship. So I thought I'll finish the interview process in the next couple of weeks for that before leaving. And that is why I wanted to apply for the visitor.
Yeah, I think it's a very good reason to apply for... This is what I would do if I were you, now that I understand what you're trying to do. This is what I would do. I would apply for a tourist visa just for a month.
Because
by the time they get back with you, it will be several months past that. We don't care.
Right. Okay.
Okay. We have been honest with the government. We only asked for what we needed, not more
than...
Okay. Ask for 2 months. Okay.
Okay.
Don't ask for 6 months. Ask for 2 months. That's more than enough for you. And if you leave in 4 or 5 weeks, that's great.
I see. Okay. And I can just fill up the application on my own. I think it's a simple application. I've seen the
I-539. It is a simple application. You do not need a lawyer, in my opinion. Okay, again.
Right.
If you can read English, you can fill this application. The key is very simple. Follow the instructions and don't lie.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Fine. And there is very little chance that I'll need to go for stamping just because
I
applied for it.
No, that's something I think you should clarify with your international students office. Make sure told them what you're trying to do, and if they see any problem with it, because you know this with this service and all, I get very nervous simply because there are so many problems with the ID, so many problems with the details that I just unless I do service filling every day, I won't be able to answer your questions effectively.
Right. I mean, they were only concerned that if this visa application change of status to winter is approved.
No, it does not. See, if it was like I said, if it was an H-1, the change of status does not affect me. Unless there is some problem with the intervening service entries because of the change of status.
Okay.
Visa stamping should not be required.
I didn't understand. So is there...
Let's say the same situation arose if you were on H-1. You have a visa stamping, H-1 visa stamping, and you want to leave but you want to stay without a job for a couple of months. Okay? And you can fit from H-1 to tourist visa. Okay, and then you left USA, and now you want to come back to the same job on the same H-1 visa. You do not need any stamping.
Right. Okay.
And I was extrapolating the situation to be the same for an F-1 visa, except for that wrinkle of service, which I hate.
I see.
I really don't know what they do with these. There were so many problems, and of course, over the last 3 years, they've resolved them one by one. But I'm not quite sure how they handle the service entries when somebody changes status.
Okay, I understand it now.
And
if
the change of service entries then necessitates having to file for a new visa.
I see. Okay. If in case this approval of the visitor visa leads to a termination of the service entries,
need a visa stamping, exactly. And if that doesn't terminate anything, then the same visa should be good for re-entry, in my opinion. I don't see any problem.
Okay. Fine. I understand. Okay. All right. Okay. Perfect.
All right.
Fine. Thanks a lot, Rajiv. That was very helpful.
Good luck. Sure, my pleasure.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Inder here.
Yes, Inder. How are you?
Good, Rajiv. I have one question.
You have a new question. Can you hold on 1 second? I'll be with you as soon as I'm done with other people. Folks, have you anybody who's posted a question has a question? All yours, Inder. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is regarding my 221G green case. I appeared for H-1B stamping in the Delhi embassy and got a 221G green and later got a 221G refusal. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to check the status in USCIS. Is this USCIS since December 1st? it's in review, and I really don't know what to do next. So, is there something that I can contact USCIS?
No, not really. This is a loophole in the system that I believe the consulates have deliberately created to hassle people like
right.
you. Because in their very misguided opinion, they are taking care of the U.S. market by doing that. It's loathsome that after spending thousands of dollars, government very cavalierly can reject your application and send it back for revocation without giving you any recourse. You could be waiting for months. So what you can do is you can apply for an H-1 through another employer or even the same employer, a different H-1.
But with this one, I really can't do anything much, right?
You cannot.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Ehsan. I have one question regarding advance parole. Can I ask
sure.
you?
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, Rajiv, I'm traveling on advance parole. I'm in India right now,
mm-hmm.
and I don't have a valid EAD, but I have a valid H-1. So is there any problem if I'm
no, traveling? No, not at all, not at all. See, to enter USA, you only need advance parole or H-1
okay.
visa. Okay?
Okay.
Once you enter USA, it's perfectly legal for you to enter on advance parole. Once you enter USA, now you have to decide whether if I want to work, what do I do? In your
right.
case, you have an H-1 approval. I'm assuming it came with an I-94?
Yes.
Okay, that means you're authorized to work for the employer who sponsored you. You can continue
okay.
working for that employer, no problem.
Yes, and this is the second time I'm using the advance parole. First time I used at the Canadian port of entry, so I have shown the advance parole, and also, you know, they took the H-1, and then, so this is the second time I'm using, so it, but still I am not using my EAD, and my not valid.
No, I don't see any problem.
No problem for that, right?
None whatsoever.
Okay, and they never ask any... Where is your EAD or anything like that?
No. And if they do, I mean, first of all, it's none of their business. And if they do ask, then you have your H-1. That's just as good as an EAD.
Okay. And one more question, Rajiv, like I have regarding this advance parole. Usually, you know, when you apply for the advance parole, they'll send the two copies of the advance parole, right?
Mm-hmm. Is it two or three?
So
I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm just carrying only one copy of the advance parole. So is it okay? Or
yeah, that should be enough, yes.
Okay, they won't create any problem that where is another advance parole copy.
Why
okay.
should you? See, remember one thing, Aston. They can check a lot of
yeah.
this information on their computers now.
Okay.
Okay. So, you know, if there was any doubt, they could always put you in secondary inspection and verify how things are with you. So, I don't see
okay.
any problem.
So, I can still use my advance parole and continue to work on a H-1 visa, right?
You are using your H... You can still enter USA on advance parole. You will still be considered
okay.
to be on H-1. And therefore, you enter advance parole, but you work on H-1. Perfectly legal. Nothing wrong with that.
Okay. All right, Rajiv. Thank you very much. Appreciate your help on this.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Okay. Thank
okay.
you.
Anybody else has a question?
Rajiv?
Yeah, go ahead.
Rajiv, again, one more follow-up question regarding the F-1 student going on a leave.
Sure.
My question is, if I state the reason that I want to complete your interview that is pending,
mm-hmm.
which is possibly likely, then is that going to kind of make it risky that
no.
they will deny the application?
First of all, I don't... Satyameva Jayate, the truth is the only way to go. First of all.
Okay.
Number two, why is that any worse a reason than I have to sell my car?
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
Just
right.
In my view, that's just as good a reason.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. All right. Fine.
Hi.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, you're welcome. Folks, anybody else has a question? Well, thank you. Good to talk with all of you, and I'll talk with you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rajiv.
Thanks a lot, Rajiv.